Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Today we bring you a special rebroadcast of our recent show from the Indigenous Comic-Con 2 at the Isleta Resort and Casino. In this hour, we'll bring you insights from a panel of leading Indigenous writers, artists, and game developers. The show helped kick off the 3 days of panel discussions, workshops, vendors, and cosplay. Join us for an encore show from the Indigenous Comic-Con 2, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Maori people from New Zealand greet a crowd in Anchorage, Alaska with the haka. The tradition is used as a war cry dance or challenge. Last month, a friendly challenge was held between the New Zealand group and Alaska Native group. The competition, called Indigi Dance, was hosted by South Central Foundation, a nonprofit healthcare organization. Catherine Gottlieb, president and CEO of South Central Foundation, says dance is part of the overall health and wellness of Native people.
It's about raising self-esteem with all the rest of the groups that already do this around the state of Alaska. And so we're encouraging getting back our culture and getting back our dance and also getting back our language.
The Northern Lights Intertribal Powwow Club was among 12 groups to take part in the Indigi Dance Competition. Billy Steffen is a member of the drum group. He says the drum has healing properties.
When I was 14, I'd lost my grandmother and my uncle and my father, and the drum healed my spirit, what I needed to go on and want to live a healthy life.
Joyce Maipi is from New Zealand.
Our song, our dances are about how we reconnect to those, how we then also, all our tribal groupings, we talk a lot about our integration, how we move together in terms of our genealogy. So our talk and our dance and our language and our custom of expressing ourselves through song, through dance, is around how we connect to each other.
After 3 rounds, the winner was the Yupik dance group, Ajilakuk. The honor included a cash prize. A Canadian company is seeking approval to conduct exploratory gold mining throughout the Black Hills in South Dakota. The company's management hopes to locate a 21st century answer to the gold strike that created Deadwood's Homestake Mine in the 1870s. As Jim Kent reports, those who are in opposition say it would impact land sacred to the Lakota people.
The Rochford Gold Project would take place in the central Black Hills, impacting several creeks and Peshawa, an especially sacred site for the Lakota. Mineral Mountain Resources is proposing hundreds of drill holes, 1,500 to 5,000 feet deep on federal lands and up to 120 on private lands. Several environmental organizations are opposing the mining project. Lilius Jarding is spokesperson for the Clean Water Alliance.
The way they mine gold is they dig up the earth and they're looking for microscopic bits of gold. They leach the gold out of the ore using cyanide, and it takes about 20 tons of rock to make one gold ring.
Charting says research indicates 76% of modern gold mines pollute water. The ones that don't are in deserts. Carla Ray Bringsplenty is a Lakota activist. She points to the 18 miles of Whitewood Creek polluted by the Homestake gold mine and wonders why anyone would want to recreate that former Superfund site.
Not only from Lakota's perspective, but also the cattle ranchers and farmers along those routes need to really jump on board on this also and say, you know, enough is enough. We've got to stop allowing these mining companies to come in and pollute.
Requests for comments from Mineral Mountain Resources, as well as the South Dakota Congressional Delegation regarding the mining project, were not answered. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians promoting heart health. Information on helping prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes at aaip.org/million-hearts. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
We're live here at the Indigenous Comic-Con. I'm Tara Gatewood. And as you can hear, we have a live audience here. And if you're in the area, you're welcome to join us and our live broadcast here in Seminar Hall in the Isleta Resort Casino. And for our listeners around the country, we're going to set the scene for this three-day gathering with an honor of conversations about the hottest comics, video games, films, and more. There are panel discussions, special appearances by Native actors, and cosplay. And do you remember the Native character from the new Wonder Woman movie? He's going to be here later today. And there's also at least one zombie apocalypse workshop this weekend. And like all great Comic-Cons, the vendors are here to bring attendees closer to the action and love of the world of comics and everything that relates to them. As we kick things off today, we're also hoping to hear from our live audience today. Anytime during our discussion, you are invited to come up to the microphone and share. And here at the table with us today, it is my pleasure and honor to introduce our guests. Right here with us, we have creator and writer for Tribal Force, John Proudstar. He's Yaqui, Mexican, and Jewish, and it is our pleasure to welcome him into the hour. And John, thank you for being with us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Good morning, everybody.
Also here with us is Mr. Lee Francis IV. He is the CEO and publisher of Native Realities Press and the founder of the Indigenous Comic-Con, and he is from the Pueblo of Laguna. Welcome to Native America Calling, Lee, or I should say, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Glad we get to do it again. This is exciting.
Indeed. And also with us here at the table, we have Wasoyo Alvaritre, and she is here with us to tell us a little bit about her work. She's an artist, illustrator, and comic book artist, and she is from the Tongva tribe. It's our pleasure to have her here with us. Wasoyo, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
And so, indeed, they all deserve a big round of applause, and you're about to hear even more why you want to clap even louder. We're going to go ahead and start with Mr. Lee Francis. Lee, this is the second Indigenous Comic-Con, and when you started all of this a year ago, did you think it was going to be what it is today?
It's really been amazing. I think, you know, when we had the idea, it was a whole bunch of us as artists, as creators, as filmmakers and folks. I really just wanted to get everybody in the same room and have a good celebration. I think a lot of what we're trying to do with the work that we do is about celebrating our aspects and identity in a way that doesn't necessarily conform to the pop culture historicizations and stereotypes of Native people. So I'm just thrilled we get to do it again. This is so amazing.
And Lee, Comic-Con has been around for quite some time, and people go to them all over the country, all around the world. And tell us a little bit about how Indigenous Comic-Con is unique. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the unique part is the indigeneity that's a part of everything that we're doing. It's the whole concept of how do we highlight and showcase the work that Native and Indigenous people are doing in popular culture, because the internet's a wide place, so it's hard to find a lot of this stuff. So if we can provide a space for that, and everybody knows, you know, that it's an annual event and we're going to come back and, you know, do this, that's where they can go find all of this great work. So I think that that's that's really what makes it unique. We've really tried to be specific about our guests, about our vendors, about the people that are coming in. And also we have a whole bunch of just nerd stuff. There's people around town. We've got, you know, brown coats. We've got, you know, the 501st from Star Wars is here, right? So like all sorts of great cosplay, because that's something that we as Native people also enjoy, but are often boxed into a particular way of having to be. But there's a whole bunch of indigenerds out here, so it's really exciting.
And so you are encouraging people to get their indigenerd on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you find that for our elders who are listening who said, what?
Absolutely. So the way we've defined indigenerd is that it's anyone, not just Native folks, but especially Native folks, but anyone that wants to see dynamic, authentic, and joyous representations of Native people in pop culture. So we want this to be, you know, we want this to be for our folks, but we also want this to be for outsiders. We want this to be for everybody. You don't have to be Native to be an indigenerd. It's nice, but we don't, you know, this is not exclusionary. This is, everybody gets to celebrate this amazing work that people are doing.
And we're going to celebrate some of that today, too. And if there's anything you'd like to add, what draws you to the comic world, pop culture, you're more than welcome to step to the microphone and tell us a little bit about it. And, John, I want to turn to you. How ironic. Our character has been in comic strips since the beginning, I believe. And here we are in 2017, and we're talking about Indigenous people still trying to crack into this, break that ceiling, or as Cecilia Fire Thunder says, cut that buckskin ceiling open. And talk to me about the irony. And you are somebody who definitely cut that buckskin open. Go ahead, John.
Tribal Force was the first all-Native superhero comic book in the history of the United States. And at the time, a co-creator of mine, Ryan Hunna-Smith, and I, when we were putting it together, we didn't know it was going to be the first, but we knew it was going to be something different. And we just got tired of seeing Natives represented in that stereotypical way. And it was just this weird thing that they all, you know, every time you see a Native superhero, he's going to have feathers, he's going to have a hodgepodge of different articles from other tribes. And, you know, we just didn't think, we were very naive, I guess, and that was a good thing, because we didn't put too much thought process into what everyone else was going to think. We just did something that we wanted to see. And I think that resonated with a lot of other Natives, you know, like, wow, it's about time. That's what we'd always hear, it's about time. And it was really good to see something come from a Native perspective. And then it started to dawn on us how important it was, as we saw the effect it was having on young people, and everybody actually, and non-Natives as well. But it was tough in the beginning, because there was a lot of companies that just didn't understand it. And they were like, I don't get it. And Can you put a white guy in there? can you change the story around so it's more... And the way they treat our storytelling, if it's abstract to them, it doesn't have value. And we weren't willing to change. We were like, no, we're not going to change to suit you. You guys are going to have to change to suit us. We're not going to stop and explain stuff to you. We're just going to tell the story. And it's your responsibility to do it. It's like Guardians of the Galaxy when that first came out. They didn't slow down to explain anything to anyone. You know, it's like, oh yeah, there's a giant head in space and we're going to go inside it. And, you know, if you've never been to comic books, you had to figure it out for yourself. You had to go buy comics and, you know, figure out who the Guardians were and yada, yada, yada.
And people, they caught up pretty well. And John, just talking about hitting the ground running, the subject matter of what you explore in Tribal Force really takes people to something that maybe they don't know, maybe they've heard of, but you just put it out there and talk about things we're facing in our tribal communities, and also encouragement about survival. And tell our audience a little bit about that. And folks, we are here live at the Indigenous Comic-Con 2, and maybe you want to send us a tweet, tell us why you love comics, please do, at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Go ahead, John.
Well, I had worked with survivors of child molestation on the reservations back in Tucson, and I thought it was really important that one of my characters was representative of that. Of all my characters were representative of issues and challenges that our youth face. And when I did come out with the stories, I saw how uncomfortable it made a lot of people. You know, nobody likes discussing it. And it's indicative within the reservation system right now where people don't want to talk about it. They just want to brush it under the table. And, you know, one year we had seven girls commit suicide in within a year's time. And I wanted to do something about that. And I thought, well, the first thing is let's create a character that will hopefully generate a conversation, you know, make these young girls and even, you know, boys in some instances feel a little more comfortable talking about it. You know, if they have a figurehead they can kind of sort of point to and say, hey, I can relate to that person. And that starts the conversation. So I thought it was really important to create that character. And her name's Anita, and she's part Navajo, and she is a survivor of child molestation. And I don't want to beat people over the head with it every issue, but every so often it'll come up. And I want these young girls to see that suicide isn't a solution. I want them to see the benefits of surviving and the gifts that they have to offer young girls that are going through that right now.
And what happens when you do present it in this medium?
So far, it's been great. You know, I have a lot of people come up to me and tell me, thank you for creating that character and telling a story like that and talking about that issue, and they'll share their personal stories with me, and it's heartbreaking, but at the same time, you know, it makes me feel good because that was my original intent, was to give a voice to that community. So to me, it's going over great. You know, I don't know, Lee is publishing it, so you might have a different take on it, but I think it's going really good.
Indeed. I thought it was really exciting to see that the Friday Pass has that image of tribal force. And so maybe this will cause people to take a look at that badge they're wearing today and learn a little bit more. It's so beautiful to be surrounded by all the art and creativity, and we are bringing folks a little bit of that today, and we're going to continue to meet more people who are going to be here at the Indigenous Comic-Con. But if anybody would like to step up to the mic, share some words, we encourage it. Maybe we need to dare them. What do you think? Everybody go ahead, dare the audience to get to the mic.
Dog dare you.
Dare you.
Double dog.
Double dog dare you.
All right, there it is. And so, Wasoyo, I want to bring you into the conversation because it's important that we hear from the people who are creating this. And tell us a little bit about why you feel images is a way to bring stories, maybe even stories people don't understand about our Indigenous nations, or even just powerful stories like John has. Go ahead, introduce yourself any more.
Okay. Hi, my name is Wasoyo Alvitre, and I'm from California. I'm from the Tongva tribe. And I am an artist and illustrator, and I did the cover to Tribal Force number 1 for John. I really think that art has a way of bridging gaps between communication between Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people. And there's an unspoken language that you have within the visual medium that allows you to do things that I think writing and music maybe not be able to quite do as successfully. I personally see certain aspects of like maybe textile design and things from my tribe that get incorporated a little bit into like things that I'll draw. So I have a way of using those tools and bringing in some culture into the illustrations that I do. But I mean, working with material, written material, and being able to provide a visual response to that too is a really incredible thing. So getting a script from Lee or getting a script from John and taking what they wrote and trying to translate it as passionately as I can and bring forth all the emotion and the strong storytelling so people look at these images and, you know, can relate to them on one level, but it also, if you were to take all the words away, it speaks for itself and it tells a story through panel and sequential art.
And take us closer to some of the imagery and the projects you're working on.
Right now I'm working on Alice Six Killer for Lee Francis, which will be published a little bit later this year or early 2018. I'm doing Tribal Force covers. Let's see. I'm doing colors to Tribal Force. I've got a lot of stuff on the roll right now. So, and then I just finished up a couple of jobs outside of Native Realities for the Smithsonian and whatnot. So.
Well, it's definitely the characters who move the narrative. And I'd like to hear from both you and John about strong characters. How do you get to the heart of it? Or what's important when you are creating a character, especially if these characters are an invitation into our indigenous nations? Waseyo, start us off.
For me, when I take a person's character, I really love like a character description that from the writer to give me a sense of what they want to do with the character and how they'll be used to further along the story and what their importance is in the overall picture of the story. When I do character designing, I take into consideration, you know, whatever key personality traits that they have in the way that they dress. Like with Nita, I think she's a little bit of a tomboy because of what she's experienced. And for me, I grew up in a family with four brothers and an older sister. We have a 10-year difference. So I am very much a tomboy myself, I feel. I can kind of relate to that dressing. So I feel comfortable in like creating outfits for a character for the panels and whatnot. You really try to progress whatever character traits that particular character has in the illustrations and the drawings that you do, and make them unique, because there's a lot of characters out there on the market. There's a lot of pre-existing characters, and you want something that's going to make this particular thing stand apart, whether it's a color of their costume or, you know, facial expressions, hairstyles, lots of different little detail-oriented things that I personally find really fun to do with the artwork.
And it's interesting, anytime you hear about these different characters and you hear why people relate to them, a lot of times it is the details or something that, hey, I know someone who does that, or maybe a new hairstyle. John, go ahead, what are you thinking?
With Tribal Force, it is the details and creating those characters, finding out their agendas, their weaknesses, their fears. Their motivation, you know, because that's what it's all about in characters. And when you bring different characters together, when you bring people into a room, everyone's got a different motivation. We all woke up in a different way today. Some of us woke up great, happy. Some of us woke up like me and still not awake, looking for coffee. And when you put people together and have those motivations affect how it affects it, how it affects their personality. And like with Nita, she doesn't, even though she grew up on the Navajo reservation, she doesn't know much about her culture. So she gets real, she's got a mouth on her. She's like any troubled kid. And when she's speaking to these Navajo gods, she gets mouthy with them. And they immediately, you know, tell her to not be like that. but I like that about her, that she's so clumsy around the sacred part of being Navajo and the Navajo culture. And I think that's the way a lot of young people feel. When I was young, many moons ago, and whenever I was put around culture or medicine people or people that were important, I felt very clumsy, and I felt everything that came out of my mouth was just, you know, and they were looking at me like, you moron. Anyway, I don't want to keep talking, but yeah.
Well, Lee, I know there is so much planned today, and we're giving folks a preview of what's going to happen today as well as the next 2 days. Lee, when you think about everything that is in this building right now, you know, what do you want people to know about these images, the artists, the creators? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think for me, there is a joyous celebration of art, and especially where it intersects popular culture in a way, and we'll say American popular culture, right? So, I mean, like, we have our own popular culture, but American popular culture, and I think that that's the most amazing part about these images, is that they're all about joy and celebration. They're all about this dynamic way of using traditions and culture, using the images that we have, and adapting them as we've always been able to adapt. That's how we survived. And so it's the next step for us, which is just beautiful for me.
And Lee, this Comic-Con seems to just keep growing. Any thoughts about the future of more Indigenous Comic-Cons?
Hopefully so. We got some interest up north. Our First Nations brothers and sisters want to have something going on up there. So we're looking into that as well, and hopefully we can keep things going. We're really excited.
All right. And where do people follow the weekend? Hashtags, websites, whatever.
I believe it's hashtag ICC17 or ICC2017. You can do IndigiNerd or IndigiNerdity on that, and www.indigenouscomiccon.com.
All right, there you go. Lee Francis, thank you for being with us today. And John, I know you got to get running here too. Anything you want to leave us with, or just thoughts on opening up that creative mind?
You asking me? No. I don't even think my mind's open. You know, just for those creators that are out there, those young creators that are thinking about or afraid to start their own book, just do it. Just jump in. And, you know, all the Native creators that are here today, write us, email us, text us. You know, we'd all love to talk to you and help you through that journey, you know, give you a little bit of guidance.
All right. And Wasoyo, any thoughts for people who are out there and maybe they're a little nervous to get jumping into some of this, or have hit that wall of somebody saying more feathers, more buckskin? Go ahead, Wasoyo.
I would just say resist as much as possible and keep doing whatever it is that you're doing. It's so important to tell original stories, and you know, we need more Indigenous voices out there. It is so great to see what Indigenous Comic-Con has brought together in the last 2 years, and it's so such a positive response. I mean, I feel so much energy here that's just absolutely amazing. And there's so many people out there with incredible stories and art. So keep telling stories, and no matter what anybody tells you, just keep resisting, you know, the mainstream, and do what you love to do and get your original voice out there, because that is what's really important and what will, you know, impact all the kids that are here today. So,
and we can encourage people to jump into this, but also, you know, the people who hold the reins or who hold that key to the door, a real quick message to them. Is it time to open these doors more to Indigenous people?
Heck yeah, it is. No, I mean, Marvel and DC and a lot of the top comic book companies and Hollywood as well, they're seeing that there are these people knocking on the doors. We want more, you know, Indigenous books. We want more things that cover minorities. We want more original storytelling. And, you know, I think as long as we keep knocking on those doors and making that noise, they're going to listen to us. So.
All right. Any final thoughts on that, John?
Like she said, they're ready. The audience is there. They're craving more authentic stories that come from us. Because you just don't want to keep eating popcorn, you know, and that's what Hollywood seems to give them, these stereotypical views of us. And now that they're getting to see a little bit of that and seeing the authenticity that we bring forward, people are like, that's cool. Why can't that be in a movie?
And I think we're seeing things get shaken up, too, even with the latest Thor movie, Taika Waititi from the Maori Nation from New Zealand. And maybe that has inspired somebody in this room. What did you think when you heard there was a Maori connection to the latest Thor movie? You can tell us about it today as we are live here at the Indigenous Comic-Con. We're going to pause for a moment, but we will be back with more people who are passionate about bringing the image forward, and definitely the dialogue on why Native participation in all of this is important. You can send us your tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We look forward to your voice.
The Native American Journalists Association urges news outlets to follow responsible reporting guidelines during the month of November. We'll get some guidance from the new Native editor at the High Country News. Also, the Hualapai tribe is close to a water rights settlement. We'll get more details. And the Keystone Pipeline leaked over 200,000 gallons of oil. All that on our regular news roundup on the next Native America Calling. We'll be right back.
paka damak mang yut aknicht lachtut ayagyat angayo kamang insurance saga ni widayuk ngaut ashagung nat kamag na niwinak akavinlug nag chipluku kaso ismag nagpika mag nag imigilutang ilaut lach kak iking kawkwivik 15 ak nat kanun kaya gawkluku 1-800-318-2596 kaso bakluku go.cms.gov/nativehealth una kingunang kaktok centers for Medicare and Medicaid services.
Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com. Support by the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate Tribes, Dakota Western Corporation, and SWO Plastics. Commercial-strength trash bags from 3 to 65 gallons for industrial use by casinos, the IHS, and more. DakotaWesternCorp.com.
Welcome back. This is Native America Calling, live from the Indigenous Comic-Con 2. We are live with a great studio here in Isleta Casino and Resort. And we are having some fun. Today we're giving you a snapshot of this three-day event that is taking place on tribal land. And we are celebrating Native artists, writers, game developers, actors, and the fans who appreciate comics. It's not all fun and games. We're also learning. We're learning that comics are a good way to educate and promote Native culture and a means to counter negative stereotypes. We're also taking questions and comments from our live audience here at Indigenous Comic-Con 2, and we hope you'll make your way to the microphone, and we have a very special treat. Talking about honoring who we are as Indigenous people, or how we connect the world to who we are, especially through the comics and pop culture, it wouldn't be right if we didn't give an honor song to all the people who have gathered here today, and we are very blessed to get the voice of a gentleman known on the powwow circuit, Mr. Orlando Cruz, and he is going to give us a taste and inspiration and definitely an honor to all the creatives.
Indigenous people have superheroes too. Hey,
thank you very much.
Yes, we do have superheroes here, and we have some of them here at the table with us. It's our pleasure to have John Proudstar, creator of Tribal Force. Also here with us is Wasoyo Alvitre, and she is an artist, illustrator, and comic book artist from the Tongva tribe. Also here with us, it is our pleasure to welcome in Mr. Michael Shiashi. He is the author of Native Americans in Comic Books. He's Caddo, and boy, he's got a lot to say. Thank you for being with us, Michael, as well.
Thank you very much. I feel super now after that, so thank you.
And we have a gentleman who has stepped to the microphone to tell Native America who you are and what's on your mind.
All right. My name is Ruben Luther. I'm from Laguna Pueblo. Thank you for having me out here today. I have a question for the writers as far as storytelling and things like that go. Where do you draw the line in revealing too much about our culture, and are you ever scared of crossing that line?
Ooh, wonderful. Who wants to take that one?
I'll be quick about it. I actually had that issue come up where I was, I have some Cheyenne Arapaho relatives too, and so I brought in one of my elders. I was like, dude, this is what I want to tell. And they're like, oh yeah, do it up. Like, here's the colors you should talk about. Here's the sacred stuff. And so I was like, all right, are you sure? And they're like, yeah, do it. So it was a fantastic way to have that tie-in. So I was lucky to have that, so.
Thanks for that question. And you are actually, come back to the mic. You are actually providing some beautiful sound, getting people revved up for the Indigenous Comic-Con 2. And tell us a little bit about what you're just excited about and maybe somebody you're dying to meet.
Well, this is my second year. I was involved in this last year, too. I go by DJ Wonderlust, providing DJ sound for the event. And, you know, just really excited and really good to see all the people out here getting involved and being involved in pop culture and becoming a part of it. And, you know, seeing Native people being incorporated more into, you know, big time, like you were saying about Thor and that movie. You know, it's really inspiring to see, and it, you know, when I go out there and I DJ all these other gigs that people don't normally see a Native face behind the decks, and, you know, I get to bring my influence, my energy that our people naturally have. So.
And where do people follow you on Twitter or however you do it?
You can find me on Facebook is one of the most is the best place to probably follow me at 3 Day Productions. I go on there, follow us, events, other DJs that we work with around the state, set up shows. Recently played at Effects. You can catch me a lot in Albuquerque there. And Twitter, I don't really have one. So I'm old school like that.
Well, we will keep our ears open for you. And if this truly is a place to indigenerd out, why don't we do it a little? I'm just going to throw that on the table. Thor, Michael, take us there.
I had a great time at Thor, and it was great to see the director, I can't say his name, Taiki, great to see his embedded humor really follow through. I've seen his other stuff. I've seen his movies and his TV shows. It's great to see. I even unfortunately saw him in Green Lantern, but don't tell anybody I saw that movie. But it was great to see that, you know, indigenous Native humor up in the big screen. It was fantastic, so.
And we even invited him to our program when we actually were nerding out and celebrating the art of nerd. And that was an interesting conversation. John, for you, you have a direct connection to Hollywood and what's going on. You know what it's like there. And to see an indigenous person rolling out this film, one of the biggest films we've seen this season, and knowing he was the director, you know how much control a director has in a major motion picture. And here we have a Maori person, somebody who knows their community, who has those connections, and there they are.
It was incredible, and you can see the brushstrokes that he was allowed to do and put that creative element in there. And again, it leans more towards the fact that people are starting to see indigenous creativity and they're liking it, and Hollywood is paying off in a big way. And unfortunately, Hollywood is colorblind because the only color they really see is green. And if your culture can bring in green, then you're relevant to them. And if it doesn't, then, you know, you need to get out of the way. And for the longest time, you know, I've been in acting since the 90s. We were set decorations. We were just in the background, and they always had to explain why we're in a film. You know, if there's a Native guy in a movie or a TV show, it's either about a sacred object that was stolen, a casino, and there's a shaman or medicine person. And, you know, they had to tell you why there's a Native there, and hopefully now they'll just start to incorporate us and not just even mention it. Just be like, yeah, he's Native, but.
Sure, and I think even the character that Taika lent, Native voice in there, you know, he's even given, Groot a run for his money as one of the cutest characters that comes out. And Wasayo, tell us about your thoughts in seeing this character, or just even knowing that there is a Maori director and holding those reins.
Yeah, no, I think it's wonderful. excuse me. I haven't actually seen the film. I have two young kids at home, so I get out to the movies maybe when they release a Star Wars film, and that's about it. So I have yet to see it, but I did read articles about it, and I heard about the director, and I was surprised, to be honest with you, at first when I heard that he was in charge of the film. And I am just so happy that he was, because if he has the reins of a film with that type of backing, I mean, it only opens up the floodgates for more people to do that. And creating sort of a normalcy of having indigenous people direct large motion pictures, which I think is great.
And so let's take it back a little. And Michael, you sat down and said, okay, I'm going to write a book, or maybe you were forced to write the book, or maybe you wrote it in your sleep. I don't know how it came about, but you have unpacked so much of the history and taken us back to the beginning, to the ugly, the pretty, and what still needs to be done. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
I actually wish I had written it in my sleep. That might have been quite easier. So as you alluded to, the guilt of knowing that there wasn't anything else out there at the time that looked at how we're looked at, the Native people are looked at in pop culture or comics, really forced me to do it. It sat in the shelf for quite a long time. A couple of years, and then I was like, all right, TikTok, I get this, I'm going to do this. So I actually interviewed people like John and others and get to meet them now in these events, so it's fantastic. And it's fantastic to see events like this where the excitement is generated, where we see how many other people are interested in the same things, as well as find our own heroes. Find heroes that are well-written, well-drawn, that are complete characters, and that's very important. So I'm very thankful for events like the Indigenous Comic Con.
And take us through some of the things that are in there, things that we don't know, aha moments that you've heard from people as they've thumbed through the pages.
Well, I actually tell people when I write in an autograph, and like, for a good night's sleep, please read this. So it's quite long. And so it was, as John knows, being writer and scriptwriter, it's hard to get those things out sometimes, and so it was. So there's an introductory chapter. It talks about my life as a farm boy in Oklahoma, and so why I wrote the book, trying to make sure that people understood that it wasn't just about this is the Native view of comic books. This is one Native person's, one Native reader's view of comic books. So there's been a lot of people that have come up and talked about they enjoyed, I didn't know anybody else knew that character. Because in the back there's a list of all the characters I could find at the time that were either Native, part Native, or about the Native culture. So it was always interesting. A few years back here in the area at the UNM, someone came up to me and said, hey, did you know that there's an anime character that's Native? And I had no idea. That wasn't my world at the time, right? So it's fantastic to see additional information that comes up after it. So,
and school us, you know, what is the history? What are some of the points that you think the world has missed, and you're giving them an invitation to it in this book?
Yeah, I think one thing that we miss, like we talked about, is that Native humor, and we've talked about, you know, the lack of complexity of characters as they're written, drawn, or portrayed has always been that shorthand. They're a stoic Indian, they're a mystic Indian, they're instantly the best hunter-tracker. And so while I may personally be all those things for some people, they may not know. If a non-Native person picks it up and they say, oh, well, this is what Native people are about, that's a very skewed, very one-dimensional view. So those type of stereotypes were looked at, and that's what we've had here in American comics. I focused on North American comics. So, but from, you know, the inception on, you know, from, you know, the late 1800s and dime store novels to the romantic view of what a Native person was, you know, the leather stocking tales, all those James Fenimore Cooper isms follow us today. And we look at them and we go out here and we see them, you know, like we mentioned, the instant shaman, or a female character is Native only because she's eye candy. So nothing in complexity. And that's what we look for in good characters, is complexity.
And Michael, you're fresh from a panel, and you were having a great conversation earlier, and I walked into the room and heard things about res porn, but I understand what that is about. Tell us a little bit about the dialogue that went on today in that panel, and define it so that people don't think I'm saying something else.
You're the one that brought it up, so now I got to define it. So we were the res porn was an idea talking about books like Scalped, Jason Aaron's Scalped, wherein the book really only looks at the baddest part of the reservation. It's like the Sopranos for the reservation, right? And so you see a lot of drug use and a lot of prostitution and all the stuff you would see in your inner city, lower echelons. And so that was kind of what we were talking about as far as the res porn. But we had a lot of good conversations with myself, Aragon Starr, Jay Ojic, Tim Truman, who is the author and writer of Scout, War Shaman, from years back. So, again, Jay and Tim, people I interviewed for the book, Native Americans in Comic Books, it was great to physically see them, finally. It was great to have that dialogue with them. I've known them for years and years and years, so good to see them physically and touch them and shake their hands. So we had a lot of good conversation, a lot of background information on each of the artists and what they're doing, what's coming up. Aragon Starr shared her information and encouraged all female, you know, comic book people that are interested, or female writers or creators, to come see her. And you know, again, being one of the prominent voices of female comic book writing, you said, come see me, I want to talk to you more. So it was a great dialogue, and I was glad to be a part of it.
And for people who may not be immersed in the culture, Tim Thurman is a pretty big name. Define a little bit about, you know, the reins that he holds and the fact that he's sitting among Indigenous creators, hearing what they're saying. He was here last year, and he got to hear a conversation about heroes. And I saw him listening. He was at the edge of his seat, and then afterwards was just blown away by the comics. And I think you were on that panel too, John. Michael, tell a little bit more, but even more so, how important we say we want to bang down these doors. We want people to be in front of the right people. Well, it's happening right now. And what changes or your thoughts? Go ahead.
No, I think that's a great intro. So, you know, Tim Truman, the creator of Scout, and also did Turok, Dinosaur Hunter. So we, and he was very humble and a great individual if you get to meet him, but he was quite humble. He's like, yeah, I think some people kind of liked it. I think I've heard some Native people like Scout, which is like the most understated thing you could ever say. Most people that I find, in my personal view, is Scout was like, oh my gosh, this is a real character. Like, you really know where they're from. It's imbued with real characteristics that you want to see, a human character, not just a one-dimensional cardboard cutout. And so for him to have that understated, well, I think some people liked it. We were like, no. Here, like, your stuff is great, Tim. So it was great to see him. And you're right, he had a lot of groundbreaking work that we've picked up on. But besides being non-Native or Native, you know, it's funny, he's had all these robust Native characters, but later found out he does have some Native ancestry. So it's interesting that his affinity has come even closer home to him. But we look at the characters and the characterizations in his art, and the years of dedicated, like, research and understanding and getting the Native voice in, very important. So he's a very great individual and quite congenial, so it's good to meet him. But in addition, I'm always on that soapbox for us Native people to create our own stories. And I think that's what's great here, is that we can talk to other people. Hey, I'm an artist, or hey, I like to do writing, or hey, I do video game work. You know, where can we talk in? How can I get into your world, and how can you get in mine? And so these kind of dialogues are fantastic for that.
And I want to hear more about the video game work. Anybody who's got their eye on this or is just excited to hear, hey, there are Native creators, video games are coming out. Anybody jump in there?
So I will say, Elizabeth Lepensi works in the video game industry, and
that's what I was going to mention. She's just come out with Thunderbird Strike, which has received quite a bit of press, at first negative, but it's turned around and really shown a huge amount of support for an Indigenous traditional storytelling and traditional characters, the Thunderbird, and also dealing with environmental issues. And she's a great woman. She's also the co-editor on the Dear Woman anthology from Native Realities. I don't have any personal experience working within video games yet, but I have nothing but good things to say about her and the projects that she's on. So.
And she even has an app, Invaders. I have it right here on my phone. And I always have a friend who grabs my phone, and that's the first thing they're playing on this. And it's exciting to say that a Native woman designed that. And that exists because a Native person followed their dream, or either pushed down a door or just said, I'm going to find out how to do this, and it's happening. Maybe there's somebody like that in the audience here today. You are more than welcome to come up, step to the microphone, talk about why you pick up your pen, go to your computer, put out those airwaves, or bring your art out of Indian market shows and come directly to Comic-Con. I just called out some people who are sitting in the audience. Come up, introduce, tell us why you care about this stuff, or maybe just the fun you're excited to have. We have a gentleman who came up, honored to have you here. Go ahead, introduce yourself and share your thoughts.
Thank you. My name is Derek Lee. I am coming out of school as an illustrator, working on my BFA here at SUVA. And this is like the first experience I had here. And I really think that this is the start of maybe a Native American renaissance. So we're coming out with a lot of illustrators, a lot of game workers, music, everything art-wise, coming into our own rather than being more contextualized by society, and we're coming into our own to expose ourselves to everybody else and say, hey, this is us. And I'm hoping to this as a kickoff to doing my own graphic novel. So
and you're in Vendor Hall, and you came with a posse. and tell me a little bit about just even creating for this event. What were you thinking of? Okay, what are we going to have in the booth? What are we going to bring? Just knowing maybe there's some things you won't even have to explain, that people will just get it.
Yes, I did a little bit of different fan art kind of stuff. The main thing I did is a Veterans Day weekend thing. And that's where I put a lot of my effort into. I did 6 years as a military veteran myself, and I just wanted to do something for all that stuff. So I'm doing like a raffle for a giant poster size stuff, and things like that is basically being, I know that Native Americans per capita volunteer for the military more than any other nation. So I thought that was, this was a great event for that, and also starting my own comic book stuff. So.
And where do people find you, follow you, or harass you?
Go to my website, dbleeartistry.com, and that's where I got some of my portfolio stuff there. I'm transitioning from 15 years of tattooing into more of the digital illustration stuff. So I'm hoping to catch some eyes and work with Lee in future projects, Native Realities.
Well, it's our honor to learn a little bit. Thank you for stepping to the mic. And if there's anybody else, feel free. And we are live here at the Indigenous Comic-Con, as you are hearing from creative folks, also people who are just curious about learning more. If there's more you want to say, go to our website right now, NativeAmericaCalling.com. You can put your comments directly there or send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And let's go to our audience again. Go ahead and introduce yourself and talk to Native America.
My name is Johnny Jay, and I'm the founder of a tribe called Geek. And, you know, one of the reasons that I started a tribe called Geek was because of all the work that we're doing as Native people, all the artists that we have, all the stories that we're telling, and all the positive representation that we have that doesn't get recognized by the mainstream. You know, we have Natives who have gone to mainstream Comic-Cons, but that representation is still lacking. And for us to have Indigenous Comic-Con, it's wonderful to have this space where our youth can see themselves represented as geeks or as Star Trek fans, or, you know, and to see that we have Native artists who are putting their own indigenized spin on these. But one of the things that I would like to ask the guest is, as creators, what responsibility do you think that we have in telling our stories to kind of push forward reviving, restoring, and reclaiming our narratives, and also that connection to our history and to our languages in a way that will kind of get our youth more involved?
Great question. And before you go, where do people follow your work?
They can follow us at www.tribecalledgeek.com, and we're also on Twitter and Facebook. And we also have a couple of panels that we'll be doing, Podcasting 101 today and Cultural Appropriation. And then tomorrow we also have Surviving the Zombie Apocalypse, Res Style. And I think we're also going to be talking Indigenous Futurisms as well.
So number one on the list, duct tape.
Yes.
All right. From the panel, go ahead.
That opens up a lot. As far as me personally and my responsibility to my heritage and my language, I am currently, along with my dad, trying to recover our language. Our tribe out in California is very small. We are not federally recognized. And our language has been lost pretty much. The only thing that we have access to are archives from Harrington Recordings, which are within university archives that we have to try to access. So there's just tiny, tiny bits and pieces to puzzles. I would really love to incorporate more of my tribal heritage into the stories that I tell. I think it's something that really drives me, and it always has. And now working with Lee Francis, I feel like I have an open opportunity to do that because he is so positive and whatever we bring to the table that we want to maybe address or shed light to, he is so supportive in that. I would love to cover some of our own tribal history and what went on in the city of Los Angeles and, you know, tribal uprisings with the mission system, and maybe even bring it to like a sci-fi level. Also, my grandfather was a Marine in the Civil Wars, and with our Code Talker book, we're anticipating several volumes after volume one. And I would really love to take his story and put it into that. And he passed away when I was small, so I didn't know any of his military service when I was a kid. He was just my grandpa. And now, being an illustrator and working along these things, I'm discovering so many things about his life that I had no clue about. And it really opens up a huge window of compassion that I feel towards him. And even though he's passed away, I feel like if I could incorporate some of that history into comic books. I could not only share his story, but find a little bit of, I think, rebuilding with my own self and my own cultural heritage through that. So it's as much as I'm getting something out of this by doing work that's personal to myself, but I feel like maybe by putting all that personal material out there, it's also showing other people that this isn't something that's taboo. It's something that we can address. It's something, you know, that shows respect to people that came before us, and it will bring a connectivity to other people that have, you know, military service family, people that have history, you know, that's not addressed by the history books that we want told. So I think it opens up opportunities for us to change it from the ground up.
All right. Thank you for that. And we got a quick comment from our audience. Say your name.
Okay. Yeah. Good morning, everybody. And good morning, Native Calling listeners in Indian country and all of that. My name is Jason Garcia. I am from the Pueblo of Santa Clara. And I am currently doing a exhibition at the Old Museum in Pewaukee Pueblo. It's called the Tewa Tales of Suspense. And just a real quick thing of a quick quote that I've read recently is, if we do not document our stories, if we do not own our narratives, we give others the power to describe and label us anywhere they desire. So I think it's also important for us to be telling our own stories, our own narratives, our own histories, and sharing them with young people and young individuals in our Native communities. And thank you for listening, and enjoy the weekend, and blessings to everybody that's come out here to New Mexico and is visiting us with us today. So thank you.
And we can also thank Jason for teaching us a little bit more about Pope and his role with the Pueblo Revolt, and introducing us to another story. And I like what you had to say, Washoyo, about translating this and our stories of people who were connected to. And just hearing even that quote, it's time for us to just, I don't know what, multiply and get busy. Folks, I do appreciate everybody for joining us here today on our live broadcast coming out of the Isleta Resort and Casino from the Indigenous Comic-Con 2. Thanks to everybody we heard from, and also a special thanks to Nola Daves Moses from Native Voice 1, who provided technical oversight for today's show. Also thanks to Roman Garcia, who engineered the show back in Studio 49, and kudos to our on-site engineer, Marino Spencer. Art Hughes is our executive producer. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Andy Murphy is our associate producer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thanks again. Thanks to our audience here at the second Indigenous Comic-Con. You can find this broadcast on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. Leave your comments right there or send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians working to improve health and safety policies and programs in K-12 schools with American Indian or Alaska Native enrollment over 50%. The School Health Index Self-Assessment and Planning Guide was developed to enable schools to identify strengths and weaknesses of health and safety policies, develop action plans for improving student and staff health, and engage teachers, parents, students, and the community in promoting health-enhancing behaviors and better health. Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael David. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.